I call the House Judiciary Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, January 19th, 2024, and the time is 1:02 p.m. We are meeting in the Max Grunberg Committee Room 120 in the Capitol Building in Juneau. I ask that you please silence your cell phones. The staff assisting us today is Talia with the Juneau LAO and Sophia with House Records. The following members present is Representative Eastman, Representative Grove, Representative Johnson, Representative Gray, Representative Carpenter, Vice Chair Allard, and myself, Chair Vance, and we have a quorum to conduct business. On today's agenda, our first and only item is to bring back HJR 7 Constitutional Amendment Permanent Fund Dividend by Representative Carpenter. The committee will take up public testimony on the resolution and consider two amendments. So I'll now open public testimony on HJR 7. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify on the resolution? Good morning, Mr. Geldof. Please state your name for the record, and you have 2 minutes to testify.
Thank you, Chairwoman Vance, members of the committee, and Representative Carpenter. I am Joe Geldof. I am a Juneau resident. I am the secretary of the Permanent Fund Defenders, an organization perhaps most obviously known to you, was headed by the late Senator Clem Tilley. I wish he was here today to testify. You may not, because sometimes he goes more than 2 minutes. The Permanent Fund Defenders have studied and been part of discussions about the Permanent Fund Dividend and the Permanent Fund for a long time. We acknowledge there is no comprehensive fiscal solution that will deal with all these issues. So what is the art of the possible? Our goals are, first and foremost, to protect the corpus. Secondly, to address obvious governance and investment criteria issues. And third, to rationalize the Permanent Fund Dividend. That's not to diminish the Permanent Fund Dividend, because it's an intractable, seemingly, problem. We need to do something, and this is a very good beginning. What this does, in many ways, is just have a constitutional override of a specific case, the Willikowski case, where Clem Tillian and Rick Halford were plaintiffs. Does that solve the problem? No, but it gives an opportunity for this legislature to start addressing some fundamental problems, and it may well lead to a path where we get a handle on our long-term fiscal problems and dealing with what I think are very critical issues of governance and investment criteria for our permanent fund. You have been in this political purgatory for 8 years. The citizens you represent have been in this purgatory for 8 years. We need to take a step that will start resolving this. This is a decent, with great respect, decent beginning step here. It will bring focus on what a formula should be without constitutionalizing a specific constitutional formula. I don't think there's any question in your minds that you could get a specific formula in or a comprehensive solution like Representative Groh has offered at this point. But I urge you to make sure this is narrowly tailored to give an opportunity for the citizens to say whether or not there should be some formula in our Constitution. That's the beginning of a way forward. And it may well lead to resolution on a variety of issues, including revenue, savings, the scope of government. So I'm still optimistic we can solve this, but the do-nothing alternative here is not an embarrassment to you. It's something that we Alaskans need to come in and start working on this. And this starts that important step. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any other testifiers in the room? I will close the testimony in the room and open testimony online, beginning with Mike Jones of Homer. Please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. I am Michael L. Jones from Homer. I support HJR 7, as it is the first step of many needed to resolve Alaska's fiscal challenges. Those challenges are many-pronged. However, here are a couple observations from a simple Alaska resident. Alaska has a revenue problem. Its source of funding is increasingly dependent on federal dollars that will go away. According to the presentation materials provided, nearly 50% of Alaska's forecast revenue is going to be coming from the federal government. Alaska needs to plan for the decline of federal funding as it will go away. Alaska has a population problem. Alaska's population has decreased by about 0.5% since 2013, while the population of the U.S. grew at 5.5% in that same period. Alaska has a private sector economy problem. In the past decade, Alaska GDP has dropped from over $55 billion to under $50 billion. A 10% decrease in our economic engine. This decreasing GDP represents a decreasing private sector business investment and associated revenue opportunities. Alaska has a spending problem. From 2019 until now, Alaska's population has remained flat. In the same time, Representative Carpenter noted on Wednesday that state government has grown 50%. The PFD has been used as a stopgap to fund state government. Taking of the PFD is a tax on Alaska residents. In fact, it's the most regressive tax solution possible, hurting lower-income people the most. Special interests. Our government is being attacked from all sides by special interests seeking funding. In each case, a small group of people will benefit from a subsidy provided by the broader population who will be burdened for years to come. Those special interests who stand to gain seek to convince us that it's necessary for government to provide money. There is a presumption that government is the appropriate funding source for their pet project. Here's an idea. Why don't we provide a full PFD to residents who've earned it and allow them to choose which special interests they want to support? The same advocates who stand before our state house and state senate representatives with their hands out should reach out directly to the people who pay the bill and convince them to use some or all of their PFD to fund that special interest item.
Mr. Jones, if you could wrap up your comments, please.
Thank you. Let's pass HJR 7 as an important first step to fiscal responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing that there is there are no other testifiers online, excuse me. Let me take a brief at ease. For the record, you have 2 minutes.
Yes, hello. My name is Gene Holt from Palmer, Alaska. I am making public comment for myself, and I am in total agreement with the previous comments from the two folks. If our legislators want to get anything done this session, you must address the permanent fund once and for all. This is totally wrong in every way to Alaskans for the last 8 years. Very simply, follow the law. Representative Carpenter's bill addresses this in HJR 7. It requires the state to pay the permanent fund according to the formula in statute, not, like he says, the whims of the annual appropriation process. Again, simply follow the law. Thank you for the opportunity to comment, Gene Holt.
Thank you, Ms. Holt. We will now go to Kevin Hall of Sterling. You please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, my name is Kevin Hall. I'm a proud resident of the thriving metropolis of Deep Sterling, Alaska. My folks homesteaded here when I was 3 years old. I have seen the permanent fund since the beginning, watched it go up, watched it go down. It's interesting to me that the government wasn't interested in it as long as they had plenty of money, and the permanent fund dividend was a couple hundred bucks here or there, give or take. All of a sudden, the government's out of money, and through our wise investments, that permanent fund has grown, and now there's a big pot of money that they can't wait to get their hands on, and they have done so successfully for the last 8 years. I'm not going to belabor the point. I think it's obvious to anybody with a pulse what needs to be done. And the previous callers have said it very well, so I'm not gonna reiterate the same things that they've said. I am in favor of HJR 7. Please think about the citizens of this, the majority of the citizens of this state, instead of special interests. Thank you for letting me testify.
Thank you for your testimony. We will now go to Mary Ravetta of Wasilla. Please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, I am Mary Ravetta, R-A-V as in Victor E-T-T-A, and I am a resident at Wasilla, in the outskirts. I am testifying in support of this HRJ-7, and I really don't like the way it is pulled from at will, without any of us voting for it or against when they take from it. We need to be a part of that decision when they take from it. And I am weighing in that they should not take from it. And as Gene said, follow the law. And that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. We will now go to John McKeever of Wasilla. Please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. My name is John McKeever. I live in Wasilla, Alaska. I am calling to enter my support for HJR 7. Been an Alaskan resident since before Alaska was a state. And I would like to see the PFD or this resolution passed to protect the PFD from the yearly attacks by the legislature. And I just want to see it protected. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. I believe that is the conclusion of our online testifiers. So I will now close public testimony on HJR 7. For those watching online who did not have an opportunity to testify, please submit your written testimony on HJR 7 to the committee at house.judiciary@akleg.gov, where it will be uploaded to the record. So we have Ms. Emily Nauman from Legislative Legal and Alexi Painter from Legislative Finance online for any questions. We do have two amendments that my office received from Representative Eastman. So you should have those before you. And I believe, Representative Eastman, you want to take up amendment number two first?
I would, but I do have a question for Ms. Nauman.
Ms. Nauman, are you online? We will take a brief at ease. Representative Eastman, you have a question for Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal.
Thank you, and through the chair to Ms. Nauman. Ms. Nauman, with passage of the resolution as currently written, what would be the situation if a future legislature were to change the amount of the dividend or the calculation of the dividend in statute, and a governor were to veto that legislation? Would overriding that veto require a two-thirds passage, as most legislation would, or would that legislation be considered an appropriation item, in which case it would be a three-quarters threshold required to increase that dividend over a governor's veto?
For the record, this is Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services. And to Representative Eastman through the chair, the way that this resolution is set up, it's a transfer, not an appropriation. So currently, amounts for the dividend are appropriated each year and amounts and then to the dividend fund and then distributed out. But HJR 7 is structured like a transfer. So the governor very likely would not get the case to veto this money. So there would also be no opportunity to override the governor's veto.
Follow up? Thank you. I'm not talking about passage of this resolution. I'm talking about once this resolution has been passed, it's part of the Constitution, and the statute that it ties to is changed by separate legislation. So if the current calculation were to be changed to increase the amount of the dividend in the future, and a governor or future governor were to veto that legislation, and the legislature is now in the position of potentially overriding that veto to increase the dividend, what would be the threshold required? And that is going to tie back to whether or not that legislation changing the calculation of the dividend would be considered an appropriation or not. Because normally, my understanding is it wouldn't have been considered an appropriation in the past. But now, since there's a constitutional amendment, which is basically going to transfer or appropriate that money, it might be considered an appropriation.
Again, for the record, Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, and through the chair, Representative Eastman, it's a complex question that would require some speculation about how a court would rule on whether or not a court would find a bill setting the formula through which this transfer happens as effectuating an appropriation. And I'm not prepared to answer that question, I think, with an answer that would be helpful right now.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions by committee members? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I would like to piggyback on that line of questioning because it's an important one. And maybe just to give us some direction, Ms. Nauman, if the statute referred to by the change HR 7 would bring to the Constitution were to be changed, would the bill, the legislation used to change that formula, be an appropriations bill, or would it be a policy bill?
Mm-hmm. For the record, Emily, Legislative, Nauman Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative Carpenter, I believe that that's sort of the same line of questioning that Representative Eastman was just discussing. So in general, a bill that is not an appropriation bill is has a veto override threshold of 3/4 of the legislature joint session or 45 votes. A bill that does not function as an appropriation or a bill to raise revenue has an veto override threshold of 2/3 of the legislature in joint session, or a total of 40 votes. The reason that I'm hesitating is because I'm thinking about some Supreme Court precedent that sort of muddied exactly what an appropriation bill is, but I have not read it recently enough to provide the committee an accurate statement at this time, so I don't want to do that on the record.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman.
Any further questions from committee members? Representative Eastman, are you ready to move your amendments?
Thank you. I would move amendment number 2.
Madam Chair, I object. Purposes of discussion, please.
There's been an objection. Representative Eastman, would you like to explain your amendment?
I would. My reason for introducing amendment number 2 is focused on clarifying the language in the bill presently. And my request to our attorneys who drafted it was to make the language, without necessarily changing the impact, but make the language more clear to an average reader of the public. I know particularly the change on line 6 of the amendment deals with current legal language in the Constitution and unchanged by the amendment is the proceeds of sales taxes or licenses through Supreme Court interpretation, that's been taken to mean pretty much revenue generally, not just revenue dealing with state tax license. So that's how the dividend, which most people don't think of as a state revenue or tax or a state proceed or tax issue, is actually impacted by the dedication, dedicated funds clause. And to bring our legal parlance back to common English, I think that's the gist of it. And love to hear the committee's thoughts on doing so.
Any questions for the sponsor of the amendment? I have a question for, I believe, Ms. Nauman, on the impact that it would have on other, by inserting dedicated funds to this constitutional amendment, the impact that it would make in other areas besides the permanent fund dividend. Ms. Nauman, can you speak to that?
Sure. For the record, Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, to the chair. Yeah, this change proposed by this amendment is definitely broader than HJR 7 as currently drafted. The dedicated funds provision touches nearly every single dollar that comes into the state. HJR 7 currently is limited to just the section that's dealing with the permanent fund. This change in language, as Representative Eastman stated, brings that language more in line with how the LACTA Supreme Court has interpreted the dedicated funds provision. However, it is still a change to a longstanding section of the Constitution that touches more than just the permanent fund. So it is a broader change than currently imagined by the HJR. This has potentially two ramifications that you might be interested in. The first is that as we think about how broad of a touch a constitutional amendment or a constitutional revision or amendment has, we start to be concerned that the broader the changes made by a resolution like this, the more likely it is that the Alaska Supreme Court would consider the change a revision requiring a constitutional convention and not something that can be done by amendment as is proposed in front of you. The second is there's a lot of precedent and historical interpretation by the Alaska Supreme Court of the current language of the dedicated funds provision, and I'm not sure how the Alaska Supreme Court would interpret this new language, although, like I said, it is in line with their current holdings. It is new language, which might cause the court to wonder, you know, this has changed, what is different?
Thank you, Ms. Nauman. Can you briefly explain the kind of the threshold on what a permissible constitutional amendment is by the legislature versus a revision?
Mm-hmm, sure. Again, for the record, Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, to the chair. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of case law about the difference between an amendment and a revision. There's one case, Beth, we commonly refer to, but it doesn't offer a lot of insight into what is an amendment versus a revision. We know the court will look at both the qualitative number of changes, that's the sheer number of changes, and the quantitative number or the quantitative changes, how broad the impact is to the overall functioning of state government, especially the balance of power between the branches of government. But without a lot of guidance, we're really left guessing. So our office pretty consistently says, you know, the broader you make the subject of a resolution or the bigger the number of changes in a resolution, the greater the chance that the court will find it to be a revision. Unfortunately, I can't offer much more guidance than that.
Thank you. That was actually very helpful. I do have a question for Alexi Painter from the Legislative Finance Division. Alexi, are you online?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I have a question regarding the amendment on page 1, line 6, that changes from state tax or license to state revenue from any source. Can you give us a picture of what the financial implications could mean by this change?
Yeah, for the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So as Ms. Nauman said, my understanding is that the courts have generally interpreted this section more broadly than just a state tax or license. But potentially what that clarification would be that, you know, the plain reading of state tax or license would be revenue from, you know, an actual tax. If you had revenue that was investment revenue, for example, that's not necessarily proceeds of a state tax or license, but would be state revenue of any source. So that would be a investment revenue would be an example of something that would be captured under this definition, but not the other definition. But again, as Ms. Nauman said, I think the common interpretation of this section has been broader than just taxes, so would include investments that may not be obvious from the language.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Painter? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Lexi. I would like to know what state revenue really is. Would federal dollars be considered state revenue? So the money we get in from the federal government, that's state revenue. How is that defined, and how would this be affected of those dollars?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, that would include, we do consider all money that could be spent by a state agency to be state revenue. So that includes federal funding. We would consider that federal revenue. And so this would prohibit the state from dedicating that. However, the federal government typically puts terms on federal funds that we still could not break just because, our Constitution doesn't allow us to dedicate them. Those things would trump our any dedication we tried to make. So I don't know that it would have much of an impact on those other fund sources, like federal funds, because they already have existing restrictions.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Ms. Nauman. Ms. Nauman, so far we've been just discussing the change on line 6 of the amendment. Could you please help us understand what would be the impact of the changes from lines 9 through 14 of the amendment?
For the record, this is Emily, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative Eastman. It's my understanding that these are technical changes to more accurately describe what is happening in the sections that those changes are referring to. Would you be helpful for me to read the changes line by line, or?
Could you just explain to us, what is happening with those two portions of the amendment, please?
Sure. Just one second. Let me get the underlying resolution open. The change on page 1, line 8, deleting out of and into and within, is a clarification that under Article 9, Section 15A, there are, in fact, this section refers to transfers out of the permanent fund, and the language clarifies that in Section 15A, there's both a transfer into and within the permanent fund. That is, there's dedicated revenues going into the permanent fund. That's the oil and gas royalties revenue. And that also there's a transfer within the permanent fund, out of the permanent fund, and into the ERA, which is set up as an account in the permanent fund in this resolution. The change on page 1, line 9, following 2, we insert transfers out of the permanent fund and 2, so that would read related to transfers out of the permanent fund and to payment of dividends. Again, that's just clarifying that Section 15B both relates to transfers out of the permanent fund into the general fund and another dedication, which is the payment of dividends.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman. So we have amendment number 2, which is S.3. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
Can I speak to it? I apologize. Representative Carpenter, what is your position on amendment number 2 regarding your resolution?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I brought HDR 7 forward for to serve a couple purposes, one of which was to overcome the court's findings in the Wilkowski case that has kind of perpetuated a problem within the legislature here fighting over the permanent fund dividend. And then the other kind of purpose of it is to find the broadest possible support both within this building and with the larger population of Alaskans who would then have to vote on an amendment to the Constitution. So the intention with HDR7 was to keep it as simple as possible to be able to communicate and for people to understand what it is that we're trying to do and to keep the policy change as simple as possible. I think that this amendment as drafted adds complexity to the bill that isn't necessary or to the resolution that isn't necessary. And the changes could also that are in this amendment could also be part of another resolution of their own at some point in time. So I'm in opposition to the amendment at this time.
Thank you. Representative Eastman, wrap up on amendment number two.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Appreciate the comments of the sponsor. And in response to the initial message from Legislative Legal, I would point out to the committee that since there was so little in the way of direction that was offered to the state through the best opinion from the Supreme Court, really our attorneys are, as we kind of heard, at a loss to tell us what it is that makes an amendment to the Constitution acceptable to the court or not acceptable. And so no matter what we put in any of our amendments, we're effectively required, we can expect that our attorneys are going to send us a memo saying, you sent us a constitutional amendment. We don't know if it's constitutional or not because, again, the court's not really given us a lot of insight into how they're going to rule on an opinion. But that would be true of a complex, lengthy amendment or, this amendment here is obviously much, much shorter. But with respect to the objections from the sponsor, I too want to keep the amendment clean and plain. And I'm simply hoping that whether in this case or some other case, we can do, our part to keep the public clear on what it is that the Constitution is saying and what it means. If there aren't, parts of this amendment that would help what the sponsor is trying to achieve, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Eastman. So amendment number two has been withdrawn. Representative Eastman, would you like to move amendment number one?
Amendment number one, I'd like to move it. Thank you.
There's been a discussion.
Thank you, Vice Chair Allard. Representative Eastman, would you please explain amendment number one?
Thank you. And I'm bringing this amendment for the committee today to have, a very important discussion. And sometimes when we talk to the public about constitutionalizing the dividend is how this constitutional amendment is being described. The idea in the mind of some might be that we're taking the current calculation of the dividend and we're putting that into the Constitution, which I know there's been a number of people over the years who have thought that that would be a good idea. This amendment would, in fact, do that in contrast to the current language, which would simply say that whatever the legislature does or a future legislature does as far as adjusting the statutory formula, that's what would be constitutionalized. And so going forward, the year after this becomes part of the Constitution, a new legislature might, like we were discussing earlier, pass a bill to increase or decrease the amount of the dividend for that year. And they wouldn't need to change the Constitution again at that point because we already, gave them the constitutional authority to do that. And of course, there might be vetoes or whatnot, but whatever it was that the legislature did succeed in putting in the statute, that's what would be constitutionalized.
Thank you. Vice Chair Allard, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to hear the perspective of the sponsor on this amendment, please.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you for the question, Representative Allard and the Chair. So I've spent a good deal of time, numbers of hours over the last several years, having conversations about this topic, fiscal plans and what to do with the permanent fund dividend and how do you modify the Constitution and whatnot. And it's clear to me that there is not support within the legislature, and I don't think that there's support within the general population to put a percentage or a number in the Constitution that relates to the dividend. one of the things that we agreed upon with a fiscal policy working group that I referenced on Wednesday was that numbers in the Constitution were something that wasn't recommended. When I spoke about the trust being broken with Alaskans on Wednesday, that wasn't in relation to something in the Constitution that was broken. It was something in regards to following the law. And what I've heard from Alaskans and what we heard today through public testimony was the expectation that we can just expect the legislature and our government to follow the statute, follow the law as it's written. Well, the HDR 7 is specifically addressing the shortcoming in our legal system, our set of laws, our constitution and our laws that doesn't require or allows the legislature to address the permanent fund dividend payment through the appropriations process. However, whichever way you come out on viewing that, whether it's, you know, you're for or against the appropriating of the PFD, the point that I'm getting at is people are expecting the government to follow the law. That's what HDR 7 does, is requires the legislature to follow the law. And if I was to put, if we were to amend this HDR 7 to put the actual formula in the Constitution, then the support within the body, and I think the support within Alaskans, dries up because they aren't, that isn't the solution that they're looking for. I understand the concept of what Representative Eastman is getting at. I too like a statutory formula, but I'm one guy. Maybe together we're two now. The irony here is that if we were to pass HDR 7 now and the voters vote on it in November and the legislature fails to act on the current statute, then that is exactly what would be in the statute, is the statutory formula, because that's what still exists. There's some ambiguity as to which 21% of net earnings or 5% of market value is going to give us the dollar figure by which to pay a dividend. But either way, you've got a 50% split of your earnings still, and that's still on the statutes. So constitutionally, we would be getting to the same thing as putting this in the Constitution, except that it would be permanent in the Constitution. More to the point, if we were to pass this amendment today, it is my belief that it would kill any opportunity for HDR 7 to get passed in this legislature. And that is that. I don't have any proof of that. I guess proof's in the pudding. We can take the action and find out. But I would just say that the many hours that I have had conversations with people over the years indicate to me that if we want to have a chance to take a baby step towards solving this PFD problem, then this amendment is the wrong way to do it. We have to keep it simple. We have to keep the numbers out of the Constitution, have the Constitution point to the statute, and allow the legislature, through the legislative process, to do what it was designed to do. Follow the law or change the law.
Do you have a follow-up?
Thank you.
Any
question for the sponsor?
One moment, Representative Eastman. Does anyone else have any further questions on Amendment Number 1 for Representative Eastman? Okay. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. I think that raises the question of, is the lack of support for putting this in the Constitution that you perceive, is that because the current calculation statute needs to be changed, and we can arrive hopefully at some point on an answer that will satisfy, for hopefully that will endure, is, I guess, your expectation that there is no one solution that will endure, and we need to have the ability to come back in periodically, new legislatures, and adjust the formula to reflect whatever the changing circumstances are?
That's a good question. And I think that if we do nothing other than pass HDR 7 over time, meaning there's not other adjustments made to our fiscal policy, then we will come in every year and continue to fight over the dividend through the policy bills. my hope is that there are enough members in the legislature who want and desire to see the fiscal imbalance that we have solved, and they're looking for an opportunity to take one first step towards what seems to be an intractable problem, which is getting the legislature to get started, to take some step towards fiscal responsibility and solving this imbalance that we have. Assuming that with a first step in HJR 7, it opens the door for having conversations, legitimate conversations on other issues that need to be addressed, then once those issues are addressed, then over time, I don't see the legislature coming back and addressing the permanent fund dividend piece because other components have been put in place and it works well. To the extent that we could agree on something that works well would kind of determine how much we would come back to the dividend question. My hope is that we're setting a high bar for ourselves. We want to see a long-term fiscal plan that takes Alaska into the future with sound fiscal policy. And this is only a beginning of that conversation. It just is taking the leadership step to say, hey, we got to do something. This is the least threatening, easiest way to take that first step. And if we complicate that in any way and we don't take that first step, then we're guaranteed to continue doing the same thing that we've been doing, which is absolutely nothing. And we just fight over the dividend until it's gone. So if we want to protect the dividend and protect the permanent fund from excessive government spending of that resource, then we've got to take this first step that will force a follow-on conversation.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is probably a question for legal. Even though there's no dollar amount affixed to this amendment, we're basically asking the public to vote on an appropriations. It is very clear that our framers of our Constitution wanted the legislature to be the appropriating body, and that's why you can't appropriate money through initiative. So even though there's no real dollar affixed to this, is this in essence a de facto appropriations by initiative if this amendment passes?
Ms. Nauman.
For the record, Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services. I would have to think on that. I hadn't considered that before because the legislature still, under the structure, retains the ability to change the statutes that effectuate the transfer contemplated by this resolution. So I'm not prepared to give you an answer right off the top of my head today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think a no answer is an answer. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Johnson, that is an interesting question in light of the lawsuit, because on amendment number one, line six, at the end of line six and beginning of line seven, it says without appropriation. So it is the movement of money without appropriation, but would this formula be considered a transfer or an appropriation is a valid question. Are there any further questions for the sponsor of the amendment before we get to his final wrap-up?
Question for Ms. Nauman.
Representative Eason.
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Nauman, now the prohibition on voting for an appropriation that was just discussed a moment ago, in the Constitution, that specifically refers to the initiative process, or am I mistaken? Because I don't believe that we're talking about recommending that an initiative go to the people to vote on this type of language. We're really just talking about a constitutional amendment, which I don't believe is limited to appropriation. Is that correct?
Again, Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair, Representative Eastman. Yes, you are correct. This question asked by Representative Johnson caused me to pull out my constitution quickly, and I quickly came to the same conclusion you did, that the prohibition on effectuating an appropriation through a change in the law is a restriction on referendums and initiatives and not a restriction on constitutional amendments.
Thank you.
Okay, final wrap-up on Amendment Number 1, Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe, I could be mistaken, but I believe that the crux of the disagreement between myself and the member from Nikiski on this language has to do with the fact that I think the other member may be more optimistic than I am as far as the legislature's ability or likelihood to resolve some of these intractable problems that we've seen over the last 8 years. And I see the current language without my amendment as in some ways you're kind of pushing the can down the road to a future legislature to resolve the issue of what the calculation of the dividend is. Now, if the amendment passes without my amendment, then we're basically putting in the Constitution, effectively, the current calculation that we have in our state law. And yet there's angst over that calculation, and it's not followed every year. It is talked about a lot, and there have been bills to change it, but we haven't found a solution. Now, if there was a solution out there, that had reached the necessary level of support in the public and the legislature, I think I'd probably be grabbing that solution and putting it right here in this amendment and saying, let's do this now. Let's grab the bull by the horns. I don't know that the outcome is going to work out as sponsors of HJR 7 are hoping, because I think that the same problems that exist now and have for the last 8 years won't necessarily change as soon as this becomes a part of the Constitution. I look back, and the questions that I get asked to some of my constituents are, well, what is it that was wrong with the language that was used for the last better part of 4 decades? Was it inflation? Did inflation mess things up? Well, no, it's a percentage. The inflation doesn't necessarily change. It's a percentage of what the revenues are. Is it too much? Well, maybe some people say it's too much. Some people say maybe it's not enough. But I think the real issue that we need to resolve is what's wrong with the calculation. And I haven't heard that discussion had at great length. Usually we kind of find ways to steer around it. So since I don't have for me or my constituents a good answer of what was wrong with the current historic calculation, I bring it here for this body to look at and evaluate and vote yay or nay on. It's also my conviction that if we have a proposal in front of us that we think is good for the people of Alaska, that we should support it. And if there's not support for it somewhere else in the process, another committee can amend that or reject it or replace its own solution, or the other body could do the same thing. But if we have something that we believe works well, then it should receive our support. Thank you.
Madam Chair, can we have a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. Back on the record. Is the objection maintained on Amendment Number 1?
Yes.
Okay. Would the recorder please tally the vote?
Representative Eastman?
Yes.
Representative Gray?
No.
Representative Groh?
No.
Representative Allard?
No.
Representative Carpenter?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Chair Vance?
No.
One yay, 6 nays.
By a vote of 1 yay and 6 nays, Amendment Number 1, S.2, has not been adopted. There are no more amendments to be considered, and the resolution is before us. Does the sponsor wish to make any final remarks on HJR 7?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that there are two follow-up questions that need to be answered more definitively with legislative legal. One of them is regarding the appropriating the voters appropriating through the ballot box question that was raised, and I think that's a valid question. The other one is the appropriations versus policy bill question raised earlier. I think those two issues need to be resolved. Speaking to the appropriations versus the policy bill question, it seems to me that if Senate Bill 26 gave us the percent of market value draw change to the statute, that and that was through a policy bill and not appropriations bill, then changes to the statutory formula or the PFD formula would be in the same vein or the same thinking as Senate Bill 26, and therefore it would fall into a policy bill. But that's just my opinion. I think that we owe some time for legislative legal to more definitively answer that question. As much as I would like to see this bill get passed out today, if that's the will of the committee, I think we do need to do our due diligence and answer those questions that the committee members have posed today. I thank you for the time today for hearing this, and I thank the public for their input. And I'll leave my comments at that right now.
Brief at ease.
Thank you. So the path forward in my mind, what I would be comfortable with is giving legislative legal the time to put a legislative opinion, legal opinion together to answer those questions. The bill is not being put into law without those legal opinions. It can pass out of committee without those opinions. It's going to the Rules Committee afterwards. It will have to go to the floor and it'll have to go to the other body. So there's plenty of time for that legal opinion to catch up. But I think that we do need those answers. So I'm not opposed to the bill passing out today, obviously, if that's the will of the committee. I just want to make sure we get those questions answered.
Madam Chairman, as Rules Chairman, I assure you we're not opposed to having meetings.
Okay. Before we turn to take a decision to entertain a motion, do members have any final comments on HGR 7? Representative Gray.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. The Alaska Permanent Fund Dividend is the most progressive liberal welfare program in our great country. The most beneficial help that we can provide to our lowest income Alaskans is simply to give them money. Imagine if you're a poor parent with four children, and families such as those definitely exist in our state. A $3,000 dividend would be a $15,000 influx of cash. And that makes the difference to that parent between paying for heating oil or not, between buying groceries or not, between paying for rent or not, between having a working vehicle or not. The fact that our government routinely reduces that amount to balance its budget is sad, painful, and regressive. It's the most regressive way of paying for our government. The people who end up suffering are the poor. The poorer someone is, the more they need their PFD. Cutting or eliminating that PFD hurts the poorest of the poor the most. Senator Shelley Hughes provided powerful testimony to the House Ways and Means Committee last year, highlighting a study that showed that in years with high PFDs, we had higher birth weights in Alaska. In years with lower PFDs, we had lower birth weights in Alaska. This shows that the PFD means an enormous amount to the very youngest Alaskans. I strongly support HJR 7. I don't want there to ever come a day when this most liberal, progressive public welfare program could be taken away. I want the PFD to be here forever. And the best way to guarantee that is to enshrine it in our Constitution. Thank you.
Any other comments, Representative Grubb?
As I've said before, strongly support the Permanent Fund Dividend. I'm very fond of it. Back when I had brown hair more than 40 years ago, as a legislative staff member who worked a lot on it, I helped create the Permanent Fund Dividend. I have said repeatedly as well, that what our state needs now is a comprehensive solution to a deep structural deficit, and a one that plagues us, and in my view is our the biggest problem in our state. And that comprehensive solution is, as I had engaged in a colloquy with the bill sponsor, Representative Carpenter, earlier this week, involves a number of steps that, as the fiscal policy working group that he served on back in 2021 said, need to be taken simultaneously. This is one of them. I wish that we could reach that comprehensive solution that our state desperately needs. I appreciate the Representative Carpenter's suggestion that, made by others as well, that if we adopt this resolution and get this constitutional amendment passed, that that will force the discussion that will help lead us toward the comprehensive solution that our state very much needs. I represent a district that includes a lot of low-income people, and our state as a whole and my constituents need a very robust and growing permanent fund, a permanent fund dividend, and also roads, schools, public safety, and a number of other services. And that's getting all those things together, which are all important for our state and for our state's people, as I said, really requires a comprehensive solution. This is one step. I hope that it helps. I look forward to working with others in this body and the other body and the governor to get to that comprehensive solution to the state structural deficit that we so strongly need. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further comments on HDR 7? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. I look at how we got into the mess that we're in, and I guess others refer to it as a mess. There are other ways of describing it, but it certainly seems to me, having looked at the way money is spent in this state over a number of years, that it is our increasing desire, our increased appetite as a state for the very idea of progressive liberal public welfare programs that has got us into this mess. When I served on the Health and Social Services Committee, we received reports from the department talking about, 250,000 Alaskans, who are recipients of public assistance programs. And as that number grows, we've found that there's less ability to easily fund dividends, which kind of makes sense. You spend money over here, you don't have as much over here. And so as we talk about, describing the dividend in those terms, I've always understood that the dividend was something very different, was something more than public welfare, was something that tied the people of the state to the natural resources of this state. And yet, as we continue down this path of prioritizing that kind of spending, that the ability for the dividend to continue to be a dividend is what is at risk of being lost here. As I look at this legislation, I think there's a lot to be said for it being good timing to have this brought before us. So I thank the sponsor for bringing it forward. But my concern is this. As we look at how we got to the situation, the Supreme Court had a lot to do with how we got to the situation. And we are not addressing that issue. We had a situation where the entire state, absent a couple of political individuals, understood the law to be one thing. Not for just 1 year or 2 years, not for 10 years or 20 years, but for decade after decade. We understood that our laws accomplished a given purpose. And the Supreme Court came in and said, nope, it's something different. And the Supreme Court has, in various ways, this being just one, that decision said, I don't know that we want to trust the legislative branch of government with as much power as they've had historically We're going to take a little bit of that power, and through interpretation, we are going to, and I'll play it at the feet of the Supreme Court. And that is a big part of how we got to here today. And so within that context, this HJR 7 it's a capitulation. It's saying that we are going to rewrite our Constitution, because the Supreme Court basically asked us to accomplish what we were already doing for decades without problem. That is not the way that the branches of government should interact with one another, where one branch comes in and rewrites the board and pulls the rug out of the, you know, from under the feet of every Alaskan in the state. And so I am concerned that this capitulation will simply further encourage the other branch to continue to intrude on the legislative power of the legislative branch. And that is why we are called the legislative branch, because we write the laws. And you have a Supreme Court that's coming in saying, well, we kind of want to change policy. We kind of want a little action on the legislative side. So that concern is unresolved. I don't know if the sponsor can fix that with a single bill. Probably not. But as I watch this legislation go forward, it will be with an eye towards how our branch is responding to the other branch. Thank you.
Vice Chair Ellard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Carpenter had referenced having questions answered by Ledge Legal. We have this going through a couple other committees, and I think that those questions can be answered in those other committees, and I have faith that they will do so. As a follow-up, I also wanted to point out any amendments that Representative Eastman has brought forward, that I want the public to know that those can still be brought forward to other committees, and they also can be introduced on the floor if he feels that he has the votes for those. So I am going to support this amendment, or this HAR 7 leaving out. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
I just can't keep my mouth shut. I'm sorry. I think that the discussion today and the conversations that each of us had about the permanent fund with our constituents is an indicator of the importance of doing this. I think if we didn't have the permanent fund, people would care less about government spending. They'd be after my section. I want mine funded. But you also have a group of people out there that are saying, now, wait a minute. We only have a limited pot of money. We want what's ours as well, so they watch us and they keep an eye on the legislature. And I'm afraid without that eye, and I've said this before and been quoted, is I don't trust us to spend every penny we have, and having the public watching it, which is an indicator by what everyone has said here today, when we take the eye of the public off of this, we are opening the bank vault doors. So it is important to me that we always have a permanent fund, regardless of the amount, because the citizens of Alaska watch. And when they quit watching, truth dies in the darkness, I think is what. And we need the citizens of Alaska to continue to shine that light, and we need to respond to that. And so I think somehow enshrining it guarantees us as legislators that we will be watched. And I think that's very important for public participation. So regardless of the amount, I think this is an important bill for all of Alaskans.
Thank you. I too am going to make final wrap-up comments on this amendment. I apologize, Representative Carpenter.
I'll be real brief, and you can get to your wrap-up. Thank you. Well, just at this table today, it's very clear that the dividend means different things to different people. And that's okay. We're a diverse group of Alaskans. What is clear is that it's valued. Since I've been in the legislature, and briefly before it, also before my time here, the trend is to appropriate away the PFD, the dividend. It has become the go-to solution, the easy answer for this fiscal imbalance that we have. And maybe that's because we perceive as legislators that we don't have any other options. I think there are other options out there. They're just more difficult to talk about, and we need to have those conversations. We're just not doing it. So if you value the permanent fund dividend, continuing, HDR7 is the way to make sure the dividend moves forward into the future. And after that's passed, then the follow-on has to happen of other conversations. And that is really the crux of the leadership problem that we have within the legislature right now, is not having the conversations about the things that we really need to talk about. And this is the first step. So if you want to solve the problem and you want to protect the dividend, HDR7 is the way to do it.
In my conversations with the people of Alaska, if there were ever a question that they would like addressed in the Constitution, it is that of a permanent fund dividend. This has been an ongoing conversation for the last 8 years that the people of Alaska feel that they are losing. The reason that they want a dividend in the Constitution is because they feel that that would exercise power over the legislature that we would have to follow. If there is any one rule that we have to follow first, it is the Constitution. And I am in support of HDR7 because this would be, in its simplest form, guaranteeing that the resources of this great state are available to every Alaskan. I respectfully disagree that this is a liberal progressive welfare program. If you look back to the founders of the corporation, the founders of the very conversation of whether or not that we should have a dividend, what we should do with this incredible, all of the incredible resources that we have, Governor Hammond addressed this very question. He saw the legislature was blowing through the money like drunken sailors, I think may have been some of the conversations at that time, and wanted to form a corporation for the people of Alaska to distribute dividends. That is why we have the Permanent Fund Corporation, because he wanted it to be a capitalistic model to take a finite resource and turn it into something that would be, produce a monetary revenue for the people of Alaska year after year. This is not a welfare program based upon needs. This is the resource to every eligible Alaskan. This is the most equal form of distribution that we have that is based upon principle that whether you are wealthy, whether you are poor, regardless of race, regardless of region, every eligible Alaskan gets to partake in the available resource that we have in Alaska. And we have vast resources in this state yet to be untapped. They should be made available to Alaskans for their benefit, to be used however they see fit. This is an incredible opportunity that we have to enshrine a dividend in the Constitution. I want to make it clear that I am an avid supporter of the historical formula that is still on the books today. The reason I did not include it in this resolution is because I'm a purist when it comes to our Constitution. Our Constitution is meant to be a chassis, a framework that we build upon in statute. And that is what I believe that we can do by having a dividend in the Constitution, and that we have the flexibility in statute to respond accordingly to the future needs. It is my prayer that the legislature will retain the original historical formula in statute, because I believe it is not broken. It has worked beautifully for longer than I've been alive, actually. And I think that most Alaskans want that. But as Representative Carpenter mentioned, the legislature has been too afraid to address the question of other revenue. So I am grateful that we have received this resolution at this point in the conversation, in hopes that we are able to put this before the voters this year in 2024. So I am excited that we have an opportunity in this legislature to be a part of a historical moment. Vice Chair Allard, do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move the House Judiciary Committee move House Joint Resolution 7 version 33 LS0439S as amended, or not. We didn't amend anything, right?
No.
All right. With the attached zero fiscal note and give Legislative Legal Services permission to make all necessary technical and conforming changes.
Hearing no objection, HJR 7 has moved from committee, and we will take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Back on record. That concludes our business for today. The House Judiciary Committee will meet Monday, January 22nd at 1 p.m. to kick off our Justice in Human Trafficking Week here in the Capitol. We will hear a presentation from the Department of Public Safety, Alaska State Troopers, and the Governor's Council on Human and Sex Trafficking. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect it is 2:21 p.m.